Kaz and AJ, Bruce Bennett Nissan News.
99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. We begin with bad news out of East Haven. Mayor Joe Cafaro announced yesterday, or actually last night, people at the Whispering Pines Nursing Home have died six from COVID-19. And he said there may be others. There are other patients there that have tested positive or are presumed positive. And he said the staff members there, there's a few who tested positive also. That sounds like a bad scene.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of those things we were worried about since Washington State.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Very vulnerable population.
And it just goes right through the whole place.
Yeah, all in one area.
Cafaro said that the first positive case was identified on March 31st. Man, that's, if you think about it, that's last week.
Yeah.
So that ripped through that place fast.
1 week.
Yep.
He said the town's emergency management director contacted the State Department of Health. The nursing home is licensed by the State Health Department. He said the DPH is providing oversight. Cafaro said that of the 215 nursing homes in the state, 73, or 34%, have confirmed cases. He said, quote, I want to offer my sincere condolences to the families of the deceased. As do we. It's tough.
It's horrible.
We all have loved ones that we're worried about.
Yeah.
And you don't want to kind of walk around talking about it out loud. You just kind of like,
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My grandmother's in one of these homes in Stanford.
Oh, brother.
And a woman that I've known my entire life is also in the same place. And apparently she's still very social, where she's walking around and she's like knocking on people's doors and she just wants to say hi. And like, it's heartbreaking to say to someone who, like, at one point in my life, I felt like was one of my own grandmothers, like, you got to stop doing that.
Yeah.
You can't, it's not okay anymore, because they take it so personally. They get so hurt by that. It's like, I'm just trying to do a nice thing. It's like, it's not, though.
Right.
It's not anymore.
She's trying to spread joy.
She is.
But you could be spreading the opposite.
Germs. Yep.
Yeah.
Or getting.
Either or.
She's putting herself in danger every second that she's out of her
And everyone
her place.
She says hello to.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough.
It is. Text. It's really impossible when you think about it to really be in a bubble.
Yeah.
Just walking in this building. There's no one in this building.
Nope.
It's really down to us. And still, when I walk in, you know, you touch something and then you clean yourself and then you touch something else. It's like, okay, whatever.
Yep.
The AJ brings the papers, you know, the news story. There's no way.
Yep.
His hand's got to be the cleanest in the building.
Well, I sanitize my hands.
Yeah, if anyone of this crew was going to bring me news stories, I want it to be AJ.
Well, I sanitize my hands for a hand.
Yeah. But you're talking as you're walking to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so your spittle's on this paper I'm holding.
Just tell me to
That's
shut up.
That's fine. Me. Just don't get sick.
Just tell me to shut up. Like I was doing.
Hey, keep your mouth shut.
Just shut up, will you?
Governor Lamont held a press conference yesterday, and it was different than the others. We'll get to that in a second. But he announced the launching of a public service announcement campaign telling residents to stay home, stay safe. The first public service announcement is called Opposite Month. Here it is.
April is the opposite month, the opposite of everything I've ever told my kids. Don't go to school. Don't go visit your grandparents. Don't go outside and play hoops
hold
with
on,
your friends.
On. Does he have kids in school?
No.
I don't know.
I don't think so. Maybe he's thinking back, you know, back in the old days.
Okay.
Just everything he told his kids.
Or he imagines it's still
I feel like for the last 2 years, it's been opposite month.
It has been.
Up there. All right, go ahead. Yeah.
Don't go outside and play hoops with your friends. Don't go to a worship service. This virus is turning everything upside down. But if we take the stay-at-home rules seriously, we'll be right side up soon enough. Connecticut's going to beat this virus by sticking together and sticking to the rules.
Wait, do we have a new slogan?
Apparently.
Sticking together and sticking to the rules versus stay home, stay safe.
Right.
I don't know.
Was that at the beginning?
No. Yeah, I don't think he said it.
I don't recall hearing it at all, no.
That's our slogan, no?
I guess not
that's,
anymore.
That's the worldwide slogan, he I think. Everybody's adopted that one.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was ours.
Yeah, nope.
I've definitely heard Cuomo say that.
We borrowed it, yeah.
Hold on.
Yep. We plagiarized it.
Governor Lamont launches public service announcement campaign residents to stay home, stay safe.
Right.
Yeah. You think that would be in there somewhere?
You think.
Right. Nope. I like that there's no music.
No music. I was going to say, they definitely listen.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the band was too close to everything.
Well, if they are listening, then can I say, why don't you come on?
Yeah.
Ashley, have you been reaching out to the governor's office?
Yep. No okay. response. Yep.
All right.
The no music was much better.
Yeah.
Much better.
Exactly.
Well, he was on last week. I thought it was great. I thought I proved that, we can all rise above this and be adults.
Yep.
So now
yep.
we need the governor to recognize this is a public crisis.
Okay, let's try the opposite with him. Don't come on our show. Don't come in here. Don't talk to us.
It's opposite month.
Yeah, why don't we do that? Ashley, why don't you email them and say, Chaz doesn't want you to come on.
Since it's opposite month.
Don't come in.
It's opposite
don't
month.
Don't talk to us.
They might actually think that's funny and then schedule him.
We all need that moment.
Don't get the important stuff out to the people.
He's going on every, I don't know, the 3 or 4 AMs that take people on the air. And no disrespect, but it's like, do you want to go on a tin can and a wire, or do you want to go on a 50,000-watt powerhouse flamethrower and actually talk to people?
I want the big one with the flamethrowers.
Right.
Okay.
New Haven is on fire now. It's the county that's getting the most new cases. You don't want to talk to the New Haven station? I don't know. Just
that's what
like,
he signed up for.
Go ahead. Don't talk to them.
Yeah.
Don't
I would
talk
do that.
To New Haven.
He might think that's funny.
Don't talk to New Haven then.
I'd like to know who the no person is. Like, look, I'm sorry I wasn't with you on Tulsa. All right, let's get over it. This is a crisis. People are dying.
I mean, we haven't mentioned it once. We haven't mentioned it a single time.
No.
Except for that time.
Well, you got to come on. It's messaging,
Now, don't come on.
That's right.
AJ,
I'm sorry. I
this
forgot.
Is great.
It's opposite month. Right. Don't come on.
Right. Like saying, AJ, you're funny.
AJ, what a dumb idea.
It's opposite month.
Right.
I did look it up. He has 3 kids.
No, you didn't look it up.
None of them look young enough to be in school.
Yeah.
I borrowed them for the campaign ads.
No, I know what he's saying.
Yeah, I know what he's saying. He did get right to it. That was the other thing. So the 2 things from the last one is no music, and you got to get right to the point of the message. No,
and he did.
He did.
I don't know what he's saying. What is he saying? I don't know what he's saying.
Confusing me now.
This is fun.
It's opposite month.
It is.
We don't want the governor on.
No, we don't. We don't want to talk to him.
Don't come on.
He doesn't want to talk to people.
Don't call here.
Exactly.
Don't respond to my email.
Right.
We want tolls.
Whoa.
We want higher taxes.
Careful with that one.
It's opposite month.
Hold on. Anyone just get very uncomfortable?
Everybody in Hartford is brilliant. They've been doing a great job.
Right. The roads are fine.
Everything is fine.
Right. People
all is well.
People want to live in Connecticut. Everyone wants to stay here.
That's right.
Yeah.
People are moving to Connecticut by the droves.
It's rich and prosperous here.
This is the best it's ever been in Connecticut.
This is the best governor ever.
It's opposite month.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Let's play a couple of clips from the press conference. And listen, I don't know. It's opposite month, but I am serious here. This is the best press conference that he's had because I think he's taken a page from New York. And we've said, why doesn't he just do the charts, the graphs, all of that? It's great information.
Mm-hmm.
And it was moving along perfectly. Very informative. And this is what they did differently, and I think everyone else is going to start doing this now.
What's that?
And they did it first. They didn't have any reporters in the room.
Not a single person.
Good idea.
No. So what they did was they had you dial in a video conference or whatever. Oh, no. It wasn't video. It was phone.
Mm-hmm.
And you would, like when you got called out to ask a question, you would unmute your phone and ask the question.
Oh, neat.
It was great because it doesn't put anyone in jeopardy.
It's high tech, too.
Well, when the governor was on, we did say, hey, are you protecting yourself? Like, are you staying in? You're in that age group.
I have a pocket knife.
Even the guys that were sitting with him were like 12 feet apart. It wasn't even six. It was far apart.
Yeah. And they've been doing that in New York for a while. So and then he started doing it. The White House isn't doing it. And I'm like, I'm scratching my head. Like, how are you not doing this? But he did it well. It was going great until this moment.
Next question will come from Lisa Backus of Connecticut News Junkie.
It is opposite month.
We'll next go to Patrick Scahill of Connecticut Public Radio.
Any cricket sound effects?
WTIC News Radio.
Did you hear someone snot whistle?
Hello.
That was the message we can't get through. You haven't unmuted us.
Yeah. Keep going. Can you play that whisper back?
The audio isn't coming through.
Right. Well, we all know that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
It's Go opposite ahead. Month.
It's opposite month. He should say everything is fine. Right. Isn't this great?
This is a great idea, sir.
This is the worst position.
The audio isn't so coming awkward. Through for some reason.
Yeah, we heard you the first time.
We got through plenty.
They're looking at him like, we've tried everything we know.
Yeah, what are we going to do?
I said, we just ended and have a beer.
So they I must have unplugged the machine because the audio drops out and comes back.
Looks like maybe there are not any questions right now, or at least we're having a hard time getting
them.
Really?
Wait. There's any questions right now?
He said opposite month.
Right.
There are tons of questions.
That's true. It's opposite month.
Yeah, keep it in mind.
Yeah. I give them a lot of credit for trying this.
Yeah, they gave it a shot.
They might be the first ones in the country to not have the media in the room. I don't know, but I thought it was great. I thought it was great they tried it.
Next person to be
I wonder when they told the media that's how it was going to go. I bet that's a big part of why we heard what we heard. They were like, oh, we got to get this stupid app we haven't put on our phone or our computer yet. No one knows how to use it.
And you're hoping all of these media people can do it.
Yeah,
you know, you got some people from newspapers that are like, what's the internet?
Right.
Like, what?
The internet's killing our business.
Wait, can I do it on this phone with the rotary?
Wait a minute.
WW what?
I got to buy a typewriter ribbon.
Yeah. I remember hating when the pen was invented. I need my eraser.
That's right. Hey, back in the day, that chisel and the hammer, that was good stuff.
Yeah, where's my quill?
Yeah. And then there's always this person, right? We get it every day. And I was so relieved to hear this happens to other people. It happens every day on the show. And it happened at this press conference.
WTNH Channel 8, Bob Wilson.
Good afternoon, Governor. I was wondering, maybe this is for Commissioner Cook. You've had a couple of correctional emergency response teams going in. You have correctional officers going in. There's not enough PPE for doctors on the front line. Is there enough PPE?
Bob, can you move the microphone closer? It's very difficult to hear you.
Yeah. Talk into the mouthpiece!
See, now it took you.
Right. Go ahead.
How about now? Is that better?
That's yes. Better.
Yes!
Wow. Sounds like
all
here.
Right. Hold
it. Just all right.
All right.
Well, Bob was through opposite month. Bob's sending the phone.
It's funny. If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Bob.
Yep. Love Bob.
Love awesome. That guy.
Awesome.
All right. And then just a couple of other things. Boris Johnson got moved into intensive care. He's the Prime Minister of England. This is not good. We all know that he was getting hospital level care at home.
Uh-huh.
For him to go to the hospital is really bad.
And an ICU.
Right. Because that meant when he went to the hospital, that meant we can't bring any more gear here.
Yeah.
You know, and doctors and stuff. You have to go to the hospital. We can, manage this better. Yeah. It's that bad. And then they move him to the hospital. And, just the prime minister being in the hospital, that's going to be like intensive care. You're going to have round-the-clock nurses, doctors, equipment. And then to move him into the intensive care, that is a whole... This is bad.
Plus, he hands his responsibility to somebody else.
Yeah. This is not good. So.
Yeah. Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers. All right, so Ashley, you want to send an email saying it's opposite month. We do not want the governor on the show.
Right. We don't want to speak.
Okay. Maybe that will work.
See how that works. Kevin from McDermott Chevrolet and Lexus in East Haven. He's been a do-gooder, AJ.
Yes, he has.
Give us the latest, Kev.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Wow, it's been an interesting few days, I guess. We talked about these boxes on Thursday, these aerosol boxes for the intubation boxes, and it's been a runaround since. After I hung up with you guys, I found out they were built Thursday around noon, and the adventure started. I was in every hospital in Connecticut almost over the next 24 hours.
This is an interesting story. So your wife intubates people, right?
Right. She's an anesthesia provider at Griffin Hospital and Mid-State Hospital.
And then so she, concerned with the lack of PPE, thought, let me see what I can do.
Yeah.
She goes online, finds this design from a guy in another country, didn't patent it because he wants people to have this.
Yeah.
AJ's putting hand sanitizer on as we speak.
Okay.
So she sees this design, shows it to Kevin. Kevin goes to his uncle. Comes up with a better design, easier design to make. They go to Modern Plastics in Shelton. They start manufacturing it, and Kevin starts delivering it.
See?
This is
awesome.
I love these stories.
Yep.
Yeah, so it was amazing. When Heather, we didn't know who needed them or how many. Heather knew that the people she worked with all wanted them, and to use NERD intubations because the protections, you can't beat it better than anything else you can put on yourself. And she went on the anesthesia forums and let people know these are being made. And the response was crazy. She couldn't keep up. Everybody, can we have 5? Can we have 4? Can we have 10? And we made the first batch, got them all out delivered. And then we asked for feedback and said, this is a prototype. We want to do better. What can we do and make them better? And we made a few adjustments. Engineering at Griffin Hospital got involved, made a mock-up out of cardboard about what they'd like to see a little bit different as far as angled on the top and the holes for the arms being a little bigger and shoulder holes for the patient to make a little different fit. And with that mock-up, a cardboard mock-up, went back to Retina Systems where Floyd made the drawings and all the blueprints for it. And that's what's in production now for the second run. And I think where we missed the boat and we didn't realize is all the distribution has been done through online anesthesia group forums where anesthesia providers, CRNAs and anesthesiologists were seeing this and requesting them. We're getting them to those anesthesia providers. But today, with so many of these COVID patients filling up different floors of different hospitals, that there's other doctors and other units that are intubating as well. Pulmonologists are intubating it, and respiratory therapists are intubating, and all these different floors are run by different people. So
are you guys able to keep up with the demand?
Well, that's what we're saying now is some of these other floors don't even realize they're in these hospitals. So now we have to reach out to more different types of medicine and get them to everybody. So it gets all over the hospital and not just in one group.
We've been talking to medical people and told them about the boxes. They're like, oh, my God, right. Sign me up.
Yep.
So I've been sending numbers over to Kevin. He's been a very, very busy man.
Cool. Thank you, man.
Let me put you on hold, and then we'll get the information where we could post it as well. So if you're listening and you think, well, we can use these boxes, you can go to Kevin. And, Kevin, if you need help, too, if you're listening and you think, well, I might be able to help these guys make them or whatever.
That's another question right there. Is manufacturing is backed up a bit because these are taking up a lot of – there's a lot of these we need to build. There's other equipment that's being built in Modern Plastic as well. So they are backed up a bit with these getting these out. So if anybody else is out there that could build these plastic boxes like a Modern Plastic type company, we'd love to hear from them.
Okay. All right. Let me put you on hold. We'll get the info and we'll post it on the radio station website. Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Chaz and AJ, Bruce Bennett Nissan News.
99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. East Haven Mayor Cafaro announced last night that six people at the Whispering Pines Nursing Home have died from COVID-19, and he said there may be others. There are other patients that have tested positive or are presumed positive, and he said there are staff members who tested positive also. We're going to try to get him on the show today. This is what we all feared.
Yep.
Once we heard the news out of Washington State. 700 prisoners released from Connecticut prisons in reaction to the coronavirus. More on that in a second. In New Haven County, we have seen the most increases in cases of coronavirus. So that is the new hotspot in Connecticut now. The Department of Labor is hiring a bunch of people to help process unemployment claims. They're currently at a 6-week turnaround. And Kent Falls becomes the first state park to close because people just can't social distance.
See?
Oh, come on, guys.
Come on, guys.
Come on, guys.
Come on, for God's sake. Stay away from each other. You drunk?
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson moved into ICU.
Yeah.
Not great.
No.
I heard when he went into the hospital, I thought, here's a guy who can get the hospital to come to him. So for him to go into the hospital, not great.
No.
Seriously.
And then for him to go into ICU, even worse.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, if the prime minister goes to the hospital, it's basically going to be like ICU. He's going to have a private room. He's going to have a nurse checking in every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Staff, all 9 yards.
Yeah. So thoughts and prayers to him. We have a good news story here.
Oh, thank God.
And then we'll get some more information on the prisoners being released in Connecticut. Dr. Saad Anwar, am I close, Doc?
Yes, you are. Very close. Thank you.
What is it exactly?
Saad Anwar.
Saad. Like Saad. Yeah.
Saad Anwar.
Yes.
He's a doctor who developed a breakthrough method to help 7 coronavirus patients with 1 ventilator.
Nice.
And we heard a lot out of New York where you take a ventilator and they were trying to split it. Then they did it successfully and it seemed to work. You were able to do it for 7 patients.
Whoa.
How does that work?
So, first of all, thank you for having me. And I just want to mention that this would be the last resort. This is not a standard of care, but we are in the midst of a disaster. And we have 2 options. One is to let people die without any support. And the other is to fight for every single person. And I am a believer of the second option, to fight to protect each and every person and fight to the end as long as we can. With that in mindset, we can split the ventilator's outgoing inspiratory valve into multiple branches. And then we created 4 branches, and one of the branches or more of those branches can be split even further. And that allows the air that is going out to the patients going into, and we can adjust the ventilator in such a manner, essentially hack the ventilator to be able to give enough breath to people to stay alive and then get supported. So there's an inhalation port, and we split it also on the exhalation side. And we put filters on both sides that allows them to actually have their own separate air that is protected to them. And then the exhalation comes back to the ventilator as well. So it remains a closed loop, and we would be able to give enough oxygen, enough pressure, and enough volumes to patients to keep them going.
Wow, that's amazing.
First of all, you started out by thanking us for having you on. Thank you for doing what you do and for innovating something that could save a lot of lives.
Yes.
You're chair of the Department of Internal Medicine of Manchester Memorial and Rockville General Hospitals. How, first of all, let me ask you, because I had some thoughts on when I heard they were splitting ventilators. Is there any chance that germs can be shared or the virus can be shared if you're sharing a ventilator with someone?
yes, that is theoretically possible, and that's why if we are to go in this direction, we would need to make sure that the patients all are COVID patients. In other words, we don't want a non-COVID patient to be mixed with a COVID patient when we are in this challenging situation.
Right.
Look, we don't have as much research on this because we have never had to be in a crisis like this ever before. So that's why in the absence of studies, we have to be extra cautious for protection perspective.
Is there, and I know you just said there aren't a lot of studies, but is there a possibility that you'd have, let's just go with the two scenario, you have two COVID patients on one ventilator, one's starting to get better, the other one's not, so now the other one goes back, falls back.
Yeah. So what would happen is that the machine has multiple different settings. The ventilator has different settings. So we can try to keep the settings for the sickest patient, and then the other ones we would be able to provide them the same support that the sick one is getting. The treatments so the ventilators are providing support, and that support is buying us time while the person's immune system kicks in and kills the virus.
Gotcha.
So we are going to be able to provide the support to whoever needs the support while the immune system and all the treatments and experimental ones we are working on can help them out. The ones who are getting worse and the ones who are getting better, the worse will not necessarily make the ones getting better worse.
Okay.
From the infection perspective.
Now, you went from, because we heard talk of them splitting it into two in New York, you went from two to seven. Is that is seven the number because it's the max you could do with one machine?
No, we could do far more. We ran out of artificial lungs to do a study on this, so we just worked with the maximum number of balloons or the artificial lungs we have to show that it can be done.
Wow.
Theoretically, one can go up further if we need to, but one will need to literally nest next to the patient to make sure that you're helping each and every person and have the vent setting. So it has to be done by a person who knows how this works and can watch over each one of the patients to make sure that we can do micromanagement on a ventilator, but when you are providing support to multiple people, you cannot micromanage. And to overcome that micromanagement, you would have to assess the patient and give them different kind of fluids to adjust their acid-base balance.
Gotcha.
Have you introduced this to the medical world? What's their reaction? Are they doing it now in New York? Are they asking you questions? Are you sending out plans? Do we have enough materials to do this?
So I worked with a couple of my friends. One does the planning on the 3D CAD printing on the design, and the other one was printing the 3D connections. So
wow.
It's a team effort, and what we did was we actually made it open source to anybody who wants to download those files. And let them say you want
great.
To download it and use it and print it in your own home or any company. And about 2 days ago, believe it or not, 343 U.S. cities have downloaded it and have that ready. And 85 countries across the world have downloaded this, and they're
this
planning
is amazing.
It as we speak. And this is free of cost to them because it is open source. We are not interested to make any money on anything. We just want people to save as many lives as they can in our country and beyond.
What gotcha. A beautiful thing.
That's wonderful.
How I would say this opens up your hospital to say you have enough ventilators, or you hope you do, right?
So the second the issue is that one of your earlier question is what does the medical community say? So the organized medical community have made a public statement that they are against this whole concept.
Really?
Wow.
And so American College of Chest Physicians, American Anesthesiology Association, American Association of Respiratory Therapists, all of them have said that not to do this. And to that, what I say is that you are in an amazing luxury position to make that decision in a room, in a boardroom. I am in the front line. I'm not going to look at my patient in the eye and say, no, I'm not going to give you the ventilator.
Right.
Because I'm going to fight for each and every one of them. And yes, there are risks, but there are clear risks of not being on the treatment, and there are risks on being on treatment. But the ones without treatment are very clear. that it's death.
Yeah.
I think if you ask a patient, look, we can hook you up with a couple of other people or you could die, they would say,
let's go
with a couple other people thing.
Yeah, let's go with that one. Yeah, I like people.
And it doesn't have to be seven, right? You could do three or four.
No, it could be two. It could be three. It could be 20, God forbid, if we need to. But it is doable, and it's a concept. And it was actually shown in the Las Vegas shootings. The emergency room doctor was able to keep many of the patients alive by same principle a few years ago. And we were able to save some lives. So it is doable. It has been done. And not doing it when we are up against a wall is selling our community short.
Did these people who from the boardroom say this isn't a good idea, did they list why they felt that way?
Yes. Yes. They have concerns, and they are legitimate concerns. One is infection. One is the lung physiology of everybody is different. What if one patient is fighting the machine? Would it cause an impact on everybody else? And so they are legitimate questions that they have raised. But instead of answering those questions, they have actually said not to do it. And I made a second video and showed to them that all of their questions and concerns can be addressed, and actually showed it that it can be addressed by maneuvering the ventilator in a specific manner.
Well, can I ask you, how do you manage that if one patient's fighting the ventilator and the other two or whatever aren't?
Sure. So there is a mode of ventilation called IMV, which is intermittent mandatory ventilation, and you use a pressure control mode. I'm going a little techie, but I'm hoping that there's some lung doctors, respiratory therapists, nurses who are listening to this. It may be worthy. So when you do the IMV mode, you are promising somebody certain amount of breaths. And then if they try to fight the machine and take more breaths, they can, but they're on their own. They don't trigger the machine to cause breaths for everybody else. So I can actually bypass the fighting patient from this. And the other thing is you can sedate the patient so they stop fighting. And then when you give a volume, some people may take more volume than the others. So what I would do is I use a pressure control mode. So I control the pressure that they have and the volume can be adjusted according to their needs. And if somebody is taking less volume than the others, that means they don't blow off that much carbon dioxide. And if they don't blow off too much carbon dioxide, that means that their acid starts to go up in the body, and I can give them a bicarb drip to make their acid amount in the body come down. So you can actually maneuver through the fluids and through the machine to be able to get the time of support for the patients while we fight the virus and their bodies fight the virus.
Have you tried this out on real COVID patients yet?
No, we have not. Thankfully, we have enough ventilators right now, but it's a matter of time. Like New York, I think people would love to have this opportunity to be able to provide them because they're running out of options.
Have you communicated with anyone in New York?
So a lot of people have downloaded from New York, and they are doing this. And I think over 2 million people have seen some of my videos on Facebook.
This is unbelievable.
I
think instead of being from a boardroom saying don't do this, I think you should be getting an award for at least trying.
Exactly right.
And I'm looking forward to hearing some good news back on this.
Right.
If people start to use it. Doc, really, thanks for coming on. I'm very proud to have you here in Connecticut and leading the charge here, answering the question, what do? We can't get enough ventilators.
Exactly.
Because they're building them, AJ. They're retooling car plants.
Right.
But when are they coming? June?
Exactly, right.
August?
Need them now. Need them yesterday.
We need them now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dr. Anwar, thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Wow. See that?
There's someone who has a problem and then tries to figure out.
Exactly.
I think when we get on the other side of this, we're going to see a lot of things done differently because we are forced to rethink things.
Absolutely.
Necessity is the mother of all invention. Well, there's the perfect example right there.
Right.
Dr. Anwar, chair of the Department of Internal Medicine of Manchester Memorial and Rockville General Hospitals.
And I love that he was like, I know this isn't a perfect solution. This is the best solution until the next best solution presents itself.
Yeah, how about this? You guys got any ideas?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you have a better idea, I'm not going to bury it. This is the best we've got.
Right.
This was a last ditch effort.
Exactly.
And the only reason he says seven is because that's all they were able to test the balloons on, the fake, the artificial lungs.
Exactly. More.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. So yesterday at the governor's press conference, the commissioner of Department of Corrections made this announcement.
This is a mass release. However, the early focused attention on releases is evident. As of this afternoon, our overall population count has dropped by 727 since the 1st of March.
Okay. He didn't say it was a mass release. He said this is not a mass release.
Right.
Norm Pattis is on the phone. What do you think?
You know, I think that they have to consider a mass release. I represent a lot of people that are inside. I represent both prisoners and guards, and the situation is tense. And we are very close to a public health disaster. And so I think there's a way to release a lot of people quickly, and it would be based on the federal model. Release people who are nonviolent and have a place to go to home confinement with an order that they return upon order of the governor. All prisoners are classified as parole eligible at either 50% or 85% of their crime, the crime of conviction, depending on what that is. 50% people, we've already classified people as nonviolent. If that person is in on a sentence and has not gotten disciplinary tickets for crimes of violence, do what Bill Barr did. If they've got a family member willing to take them in, place them in the custody of the family member with an order to return, subject to being arrested for escape if they don't return on demand. I'm not a fool. Maybe I am. And maybe it would be foolish in some respects because there will undoubtedly be some failures as a result. But it would seem to me that given everything we're learning about COVID-19, leaving people cooped up in close quarters is a recipe for disaster. As the epidemic tightens its grip on the prisons, there's a very real possibility there may not be enough guards. And if that happens, who's going to supervise or superintend the prisoners? And we really just can't lock them up and throw away the key. That's a metaphor that isn't public policy. That's just anger talking. So I think the governor has the means. I think he needs to act promptly. I think that by week's end, if they followed this protocol, they could ease the overcrowding. We have a lot of excess capacity in the prison system. Our inmate population was at about 19 or 20,000 not many years ago. I'm told they are reopening some old wards to create distancing. So it's possible to do better, and I think the governor needs to do it. I'm not persuaded by the commissioner's happy talk. A lot of double talk has been going on in DOC recently. For example, in one institution, people were told to self-quarantine for 14 days if they were exposed to someone. When one of the people within the institution came down with COVID-19, they dropped that requirement, and people are now coming into work exposed. I've got bad news. They're leaving exposed as well. So I think we've got to do a better job of managing that risk. Many of the offenders in there are nonviolent status offenses. They're not a risk of harm to others, and the DOC knows it. I think it's time for Lamont to act and act decisively.
Seems like you thought about this a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, been on the phone a lot with it. We've had very difficult conversations in our firm. You know, what can we do legally for people? Right. And if we pick to do something for person A and don't do it for person B, what are we going to tell person B? You know, we think it's time for the governor to show some strong leadership here. I realize prisoners aren't everybody's top priority, but we've had weeks now to feel our way into this, and it's time to get this done, and he should be getting it done this week.
Well, you could still go out and buy a garden gnome. So, yeah. I don't know.
That's important.
Yeah. Are we really on a lockdown here?
Got to have that flamingo in front. Yeah.
On a personal note, how are things in your life? Court life is different now, right?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, I've been running around from one court to another for the better, for decades. And this is the first time I've had an enforced time period of reflection. And, it's been good for me. It's been different. I had my first video conference hearing in federal court last week. It was a disaster, and it showed me that the new world to come will be a slower paced world as we sort our way through this. Personally, I've had a couple friends who are ill. No one has died yet. On an ultra personal note, a loved one has been moved into a hospice, but that's not COVID related. So, it's a somber time. I'm like everybody else.
It's tough.
I woke up a month ago thinking, boy, who lives better than me? And now I realize everything I cherish, I'm holding by a very tenuous thread. So it's what it is. You know?
Well, yeah. Thank you for coming on, brother. Appreciate it.
Yeah, be well, guys.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Bye. Dr. Ingram, paging Dr. Ingram.
Dr. Ingram, please call Dr. Ingram. Dr. Ingram.
We've had him on the show quite a bit. I've never talked to a doctor so entertaining.
Yes.
But informative. At the same time, you know what we got a lot of yesterday? People sending like emails and videos from YouTube. There's some people out there, Doc, that are haters.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know. No, of course, the pharmaceutical companies and I have not gotten along over the years. There are people who are paid to be hitmen against anybody that's kind of alternative or wants to look at a different view. And it's big business and big protection, you know. Like this. Has anybody told you that 350 million pigs in China dropped dead from coronavirus over the last 18 months?
No. Well, how would you know that?
It's all over the Chinese hardcore news sources. It's been followed by our agricultural news, by China's agricultural news. They had a super pandemic has been going on, but it's been snuffed by big business. And it came from the industrial, big agri farms that are there. Right. Did you know there are pig farms in China that are 10 stories high, one story after the other? I mean, all this has been going on. And you never heard a word about it.
Huh.
And then we get the human outbreak, right?
Right.
So it can't be just a coincidence. And then, you know, everybody's focusing on, well, it was 5G or, well, it was Bill Gates. And
all right. Hold it. Let's go through some of this. What do you think about the 5G thing? Because there is some of that there. And what's the story on that, Phil? Are they saying that the 5G is spreading it faster or is causing it?
I think what originally happened is that it had only spread in areas that had 5G. So people took that as enough information to we should start burning down 5G towers.
Yeah. Doc, yeah. What do you think of that?
It's not enough. I mean, obviously people are getting this virus all over the place.
So you think the 5G towers are causing this?
The 5G might have something to do with it, but not causing it. No, it's a virus. It's a definite pathogen, and it's all over the place where 5G is, where 5G isn't. So
the scientists have said this has absolutely nothing to do with it, and if you burn the towers down, we can't communicate with you properly. Don't do that.
I heard
Well, you don't want to burn the towers down.
And how do you burn a metal tower?
Exactly. We can knock it down first. But I heard different theory where people were saying because that they caused this because what we're doing now, we're talking on our phones, we're texting, we're using phones a lot more, that they caused this disease to make us all go to our phones and use
them. No. Nobody purposely caused this. You know, H1N1 killed 500,000 people. It came out of a pig farm in Mexico. It came because the waste was attacked by insects. The insects bit humans. They got infected. So we don't know exactly, some similar transmission occurred here from animal to human. This pig connection, though, that's a realistic one. A number of the earliest ill people were in the hog farming, you know, the hog trading. They were trading in carcasses. And they were like early Wuhan environmental victims.
Right.
And I mean, you got to look at this whole thing of industrial farming, bird flu, duck flu, chicken flu, pig flu, swine flu.
Well, what about these wet markets that they're talking about?
You have to look at it because you're talking about butchering animals live and hanging them in the stalls. And then a number of people were sick there. And, you know, so there's something from animal to human. It can't just be from bat to human. Nobody's in a cave harvesting bats.
But you know, there were no consumption, right?
Well, there are weird situations where weirdo animals are eaten, but let me just talk the facts. At the Wuhan market at the time of the outbreak, there were no bats there.
Yep. Really?
They
ate them all.
I heard it jump from like a bat to something else.
Bat to an intermediate. The intermediate is the pig.
Wow. Gotcha.
That's all that China's done. You know, there's pigs everywhere. So that's the best evidence we have. But if it's a swine virus, it's a filthy, you know, filth virus.
Right.
And that's why I already armed the WHO with what to do and successfully armed them. And they are testing my work. and so are a number of clinicians, that we have to fight back against this filth, which is extremely contagious. Instead of concentrating on theories of powers and, you know, biogerms, we have a real problem. We have to deal with it. That's what I'm saying.
The WHO really screwed this one up, right? They covered for China.
Yeah, they covered for China. They were talking and praising China, and they covered for big. They tried to cover for big business, but they shot big business in the foot. You know, and so it's a mess of incompetence all over, whether from the White House to the Yellow House. I mean, it's, and medicine has no way to handle this. Nothing. An aquarium drug with a combination of chlorine and quinine synthetic is just not, you know, it's not stopping it. You could ask me how to stop it, and I could do it. And I am doing it in certain pilot areas with my research. The physicians that are doing what I'm suggesting are wiping out cases. So this has to be looked at. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's and that goes back to the natural medicines.
And
there are so many natural antivirals. The kingpin is what we talked about before, the wild oregano oil, which you all should be taking because you won't get it if you take it, by the way.
We were looking, Jennifer and I were looking it up last night. And we look at it like this, like, all right, you might be crazy, but you might not be.
Right.
Right. And if we could take a spoonful of cinnamon and a little bit of wild
helps
oregano
the medicine
oil,
go down. Right?
Why not?
Yeah, I mean,
like, I don't care. I'll try it.
If I'm crazy, let's go back to the Old Testament. The Old Testament, and I'm not preaching at all, it says, hey, listen, you human race, you should purge and clean and purify and rectify your problems. Make sure you use my medicine in the mountains. And he specifies the oregano, in this week he called it an extract.
Now, let me ask you something, because there was this whole cinnamon challenge going on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
And kids were seeing if they could have a tablespoonful of cinnamon
and
hold it.
We tried it here, yeah.
We've tried it here.
Yep.
So when was that? I didn't know about that.
When was that? A couple of years ago?
8 years ago?
I was in college, yeah.
8 years ago, maybe?
Can you reboot that? I mean, if we had a run on cinnamon, it wouldn't hurt anybody. You know?
That would be good. All right, we're going
to
do that. That'll be our participation in helping.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Just a couple serious things before we go here. Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister of Britain. What do you think about that?
Bad one. We don't know if he's an alcoholic. It could be if he's got some predisposing. He may not come out alive. It'll tear the world to shreds psychologically if a king leader is knocked out.
I thought the same thing. I mean, look at what's happening to the market, supermarkets now.
Yeah.
Imagine if this starts picking off people that we perceive to be
our leaders,
you know, having all of the best medical, access.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And they're talking about people hanging themselves and jumping off of bridges. I don't know how superficial we are. If we just could figure out that, look, we're going to survive this. We survived 1918.
Yeah.
Jeepers. There's
no way.
It's
funny you see pictures of that, though, and everyone's walking around with masks, and the fact that we're not now is a little nutty.
But now WHO, as incompetent as it was, they know that oregano oil kills the virus. They just did some research. Why aren't they releasing it? So cinnamon oil does also. All I'm saying is we should really look into this and do more than what I'm doing, which is pocket trials with different physicians. Do an official government trial with antivirals, natural antivirals, that people could access and show that, look, these 20 cases were put on Dr. Ingram's protocol, and none of them fell into double pneumonia.
Right.
It's worth looking at.
Well, we're linked up to your stuff at WPLR.com and 959thefox.com. Thank you, Doc.
Yeah, and look at the edge of the woods there in your local area and look at oreganol.com and study the information there. Yeah.
Do you have any interest in any of these companies?
I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have any financial ties in terms of getting a check or anything like that. Now, also, I do have this, though. KazIngram.com, I do sell my books, but go there and look at the non-commercial information, which are the articles.
Gotcha.
Thank you, Doc.
Chaz and AJ, Bruce Bennett Nissan News.
99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Some bad news out of East Haven last night. The mayor is on the phone. Good morning, Mayor Cafaro.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
What's the breaking news out of East Haven this morning?
Well, we have a you know, we have a nursing home in East Haven that, you know, 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, we, you know, our emergency med, I'm your management director, Matt Marcarelli, also our fire chief, got word from East Shore Health District that there was five confirmed deaths over there from COVID-19.
So all at once.
Of a sombering moment. All at once, yes. So it's kind of, you know, a sombering moment here in East Haven right now. So.
Oh, and all of Connecticut, so, we're all thinking of you guys.
Yep.
Yeah.
We feared this when we saw what happened in Washington State. We thought, man, once that gets into assisted living, it just ravages the place.
Yeah, like wildfire.
So I heard the story was six dead. So it was five initially, then another person has passed?
No, there was the first, you know, the first confirmed positive COVID case was on March 31st. And that person passed away, I think, on April 1st or April 2nd, like, you know, like 4 or 5 days later.
Okay.
So we've been dealing with them. We, you know, we had contact with East Shore Health District, like we do, you know, we talked to them like 4 or 5 times a day, and they, you know, they notified us that they were lacking PPE. So our first responders, you know, right after, you know, we heard about the case on March 31st, we brought them down, you know, like a boatload of PPE for their safety. And then yesterday was the phone call at 4 o'clock that five more residents passed away.
It's unbelievable. All in one day, all around the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, I don't know the logistics, you know, what time they passed away, but, you know, there's more confirmed positive cases there. You know, we
Mayor,
also
can I, Mayor, can I ask you to speak into the mouthpiece of the phone here? We can hear you better then.
Can you hear me now?
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, we, you know, we don't know the logistics about what time they all passed away, but we also found out yesterday that there's also some workers there that are also positive, and there's more residents there that are positive. So we're handling it. We're working.
How many more residents? Do we know that?
I think there's maybe like 4 or 5 more that were, you know, that were tested positive.
And are they quarantined in separate rooms?
I'm sure they are, Chaz. I really don't know the logistics on that. I'm sure that, you know, Whispering Pines is doing everything they can in their power to quarantine people and separate them from the other population of residents.
It seems to me that they are the high end of the most vulnerable. Why wouldn't they be transferred to a hospital where they can get access to a ventilator and those things?
Well, you know, we were told that, you know, that there are some of the cases, you know, that are in hospitals. They're in, you know, they're in.
So some has been transferred. So this hot. So this may be a disaster over there, right? So some have been transferred out. 5 died yesterday. 4 or 5,
correct.
At least 4 or 5 more cases. There's a couple of presumed cases. Some staff has it. This sounds like the state needs to descend on this place, and I don't know.
Well,
it sounds pretty bad.
Yeah, the Department of Public Health, which is the state, they're monitoring the situation very, very closely, you know, and then East Shore Health District gives us updates. We, you know, we don't.
Mayor, we're losing this. Can you talk into the mouthpiece, please?
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, when you do that, we can hear you perfectly. Thank you.
Yeah. The town of East Haven does not monitor, you know, our nursing homes. They're monitored by the Department of Public Health.
Right.
And
no, I'm not saying this is something the town should be doing, but this is something that should be done, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, East Shore Health District reached out to the Department of Public Health, and they're monitoring the situation very, very closely. You know, they're down there, twice a day monitoring stuff. They're monitoring all their procedures. You know,
five,
and
five
whatever
guys
the town
one day,
can
that's
do,
a big day. That's, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever yeah. the town can do, we're doing. I mean, we, you know, we reached out to them, like I said, on March 31st.
But the town isn't responsible for this facility. Right. So
no,
you got some PPE over there, and yes, you told them we'll do whatever you need, and the rest is up to the state, right?
Yeah, the state has to, you know, they have to, you know, monitor the situation. You know, we brought over gloves. We brought over masks to try and help them out because, I mean, you know, part of the problem that every single municipality here in Connecticut is dealing with is the lack of PPE.
Right.
You know,
the whole world.
We're in a good.
The whole world is suffering from a lack of PPE.
Yes.
Right, right, right. You know, fortunately, we're in a halfway decent position. You know, if this epidemic goes on, you know, long, you know, we're going to be in trouble just like everybody else.
Yeah.
But, you know, so far we're in decent shape, you know, not in great shape, but we're in decent shape for PPE.
Okay. So to recap, is it Whispering Pines?
Yes, it's Whispering Pines.
In East Haven, had one death in April 1st, on April 1st, five dead yesterday, another four or five cases, potentially more, and now some cases with the staff. Do we know how many staff members?
No, we don't have that, no.
Oh, boy. No. And some folks have been transferred out to hospitals, so even more. So you have four or five confirmed, five dead, one dead April 1st. So let's just say 5, 10, 11, and then a couple of staff, 12, 13, some to the hospital before. It could be potentially 15 or more cases in this one spot. This is big. This is a big situation.
Yeah, we're, you know, like I said, we're monitoring as close as we can, but, you know, it's sort of in the hands of the DPH, you know, the Department of Public Health.
How many people are in Whispering Pines?
I don't know that information.
Residents.
You know, I want to say it's got to be close to 100 or maybe over 100, but don't quote me on that.
I got you. Yeah. All right, Mayor, if there's anything we can do, I mean, please feel free to use this station as your megaphone, whatever you need.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Right. Have a good day.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. Wow.
Yeah.
Mayor of East Haven, Cafaro, coming on yesterday at 4. They announced that five people died in one day at Whispering Pines. One death on April 1st. So that's a total of 6 patients dead. More cases have been confirmed from residents, 4 or 5, the mayor said, and a few staff, and some have been brought to area hospitals. That sounds like it could be a potential disaster.
Yeah.
What do you do in this situation? I mean, you just descend on there and break the place up, right?
I would imagine. I have no idea.
Or you get who doesn't have it out of there and just use that as a COVID hospital?
Maybe.
Yeah, but where do they go? You know?
What,
it's
the folks
tough.
that don't have it aren't showing signs? Because you'd have to self-quarantine them somewhere for 2 weeks.
You have to assume that they have it. You have to assume that they have it.
Right.
You can't just send them somewhere else.
But you have to split the cases up. So if you have 4 or 5 people in that building of 100 or so, you have to get those 4 or 5 out into a wing with vents.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right? And then separate the rest of them, and they're self-quarantined. It's a mess. That's a mess.
And monitor them. See where they're at. Yep.
This is why it's so dangerous for elderly. I mean, it's everywhere. It happens instantly. It's everywhere.
Oh, man. All right, let's get on the phone with Brian Foley, Assistant to the Commissioner, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. That covers state police and so many different agencies. Hey, Brian, how are you?
Well, that's tough to hear what's going on in New Haven. There isn't nobody that I know that doesn't know an old timer somewhere. If you only know one that's passed away to this point, I think you're lucky. I know multiple, unfortunately, and it's the assisted living places around the state are top of the list concern every conference call.
What happens with something like this? This is a thing. Now, what department from the state would get involved in this?
There's a specific department for our elderly population, but also the Department of Public Health as well. And both of them monitor it, but it comes down to the hospitals being able to accept and treat all these patients, unfortunately. Some of the things that we're planning on, and I've talked about this, is the extra hospitals that are being built right now, and specifically down in that region for one at Southern Connecticut, the one at Western Connecticut, and they just took one off of mothballs in Stanford.
Connecticut National Guard has been doing a tremendous job with that.
Yep. Amazing. And coordinating through the emergency management folks who coordinate everything and the FEMA folks to get all that done. But trust me when I say that the state is well aware of the dangers and the crisis coming at the assisted living and the older folks population right now, as they are the most dangerous and almost, you know, as many resources as they can dedicate to it. But the hospitals are starting to fill up, and they're getting, you know, it's a matter of how many people can you treat. And that's what we've been trying to predict 2 and 3 weeks out. And that's why these facilities are being built. And that's why we need staff. You have doctors and nurses. You have military had just added a bunch of medical help as well. And now that's where we're looking for volunteers to come and fill those as well.
I know that the governor of New York yesterday said, hey, listen, less deaths, less new cases could be a good sign. And I think the governor in Connecticut said that as well. But I feel like the storm is coming now.
Yeah, we're not. No one on the emergency management side is even beginning to think about slowing down at this point and looking for successes. We're bracing and trying to prepare for the worst case scenarios that lie ahead in a couple weeks. Certainly, everything that we hear inside the emergency operations center is that within the next week or two, things are going to get really bad. And you're starting to see it now. You're starting to see all the signs for it. We try to stay 2 and 3 weeks ahead of everybody. We try to listen to all our medical experts we have here in the state. We try to learn from lessons that you saw in Seattle, that you saw in San Francisco, New York, New Jersey, what they're going through down the southern end of the state now. And we just try to predict how we can best help them. And there's nobody in this country I know that's sitting there saying, boy, we have just the right amount of PPEs.
Right.
No one that I know. And you know, when the towns don't have enough, they come to the state. We try to connect them to the right resources to get them. There's a lot on the way. It's just how fast can they get there? And it's just everyone's facing it. And unfortunately, they're all coming from the same place. And you're seeing some amazing donations coming in every single day. And that starts to be a little bit of an issue is keeping track of, you know, if I'm Police Chief Joe in any town USA and someone drops 1,000 PPEs on my front steps, I might not report that I have it. You know, I'm going to want to protect my staff and a fire chief and hospitals, and keeping track of the donations and who has what is I don't want to say problematic, but a concern.
Right. I kind of get that, though, if you hold on to it, because that donation to your specific department.
Yeah.
And they want you to have it. Yes,
could be for a reason, maybe that they
Absolutely.
Were once saved by this department.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're talking about worst case scenarios and stuff. I don't know if we want to get into it, but when you're in these rooms, you know, like what comes up?
Again, it's just trying to predict and prepare who needs what and where, and the state works on the logistics of that and connecting it.
So bad case scenario is prison guards, right? Like not having enough. Another one would be state cops, right? Troopers not having enough.
Yep. So you're talking about like the division of the PPE certainly is.
No, when they start getting sick.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's happening. One, in state police, regular police, Department of Corrections, all first responders are starting to, the numbers are starting to add up. But those plans are in place on how to handle them. And if you look down in what New York City was up to, about 19% of their staff was out sick. To this point, the local police departments and the state police have done a great job in managing that and immediately isolating the people, sending them offline for 2 weeks. And you have plans for when you start to get critically low. Each police chief that we've talked to around the state all have very specific plans. When our staff gets low, they say they're going to go to the surrounding towns around them and start coming from there. And the state, again, has a pretty deep bullpen for state polices around the state to assist as well. So Everyone has a pretty good plan. It's like the blue plan. It's almost like a mutual aid thing where everyone's going to cover. But to this point,
what's police the blue chiefs plan?
Blue plan is like when something really bad happens in your town, the other cops from other towns come in and support you.
Gotcha.
In plain English.
Okay.
But those are usually for really short periods of time. This is an extended crisis, as you can see.
That's the thing with this, it doesn't end. It's not
ending.
No,
you don't. You don't. And you have, but the thing is, you have cops that are testing positive that are well back in the rotation now, healthy and working, and troopers are no exception. You know, we have troopers that have been out and that have strongly gotten through it and jumped right back in the mix and are out doing their job every day the way they're supposed to, and we're proud of that.
Who's that?
That's my niece coming from my daughter to watch her for the day so I can go out to work.
I hear a dog.
That's actually my dog, Trix. My daughter's
Trix.
Dog.
Trix! Yeah. Hi, Trix!
Good time for it.
It's Brian Foley's partner now.
Right.
Yeah. Brian and Trix.
Right. Brian and Trix. That sounds like a cop
show. I don't think he's solving too many capers.
Sounds like a cop show.
Yes, it does. I'd watch.
Officer Trix.
What channel that'd be on.
what kind of dog is Trix?
Like a Yorkie, Morky type of my daughter. My
you don't even
dog.
Know.
It's a Morky. It's my daughter's dog. I had a box.
He lives with this dog. Doesn't even know what it is.
He's like, oh, no Caprindo.
It's like a funny reboot.
I broke the line right here.
All right. Brian Foley, Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. Thank you, and thanks to all the folks.
Hey, thanks for getting the word out, you guys, for real. You guys are doing such a great job covering this. All the media in Connecticut is, and I mean that, getting the word out, especially for our volunteers, because we need so many volunteers and the blood drives and everything that the state police are doing. You guys cover everything. Thank you.
No, we can't. It's our honor. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. We're just talking to the mayor of East Haven. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 Fox. Man, bad news coming out of East Haven.
Yeah.
Assisted living facility. 5 deaths yesterday, 1 on April 1st. Multiple patients transferred out to hospitals. Potentially more patients with COVID. Not patients, but residents.
Yeah.
And a couple of staff members potentially with COVID. So bad scene over there. And
yeah,
this is, I think we all know people or have loved ones or there's a certain group in all of our lives that we're worried about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? Like, you know, you can't have them go out shopping, right?
Nope.
Absolutely not.
No. So I thought maybe we'll get Tina, director of the Home Aides on the show. She's director of home care of the Home Aides. Are you getting a lot of people calling about grocery shopping and things of that nature?
Hi. Actually, we are just going to start doing the grocery shopping, which also encompasses well-being checks for your loved one. So, you know, if you don't want your loved one out because there is a realistic need, I tried to do Peapod the other day and there's no time slots available.
None.
So none, absolutely, including pickup. I tried to just do pickup and everything is booked. So there is a real focus on, you know, your loved ones staying home because they're at great risk. So instead of having them go out to the store and risk it, you know, our caregivers can come out and do grocery shopping, deliver it, and also do, you know, a safety check as well on your loved one and make sure everything is, you know, okay with them and see how they're feeling. We sanitize the vehicles that we provide. We have 17 vehicles out on the road that transport our caregivers if they don't drive. We sanitize them daily. We have all the PPE equipment for our caregivers to go ahead and go out in the field, but also do these tasks for shopping. And they can also help, you know, the loved one bring the items in, help get them set up if they need that extra help.
Or if you want, or if they want, you could just leave it on the doorstep or whatever.
Or we can leave it on the doorstep, whichever is easiest for them. If they don't need the immediate need to help, you know, bring it in, then we can certainly leave it right there on the doorstep for them. Ring their doorbell, knock on the door, or give them a call and just let them know that it's out there for them.
have you been watching people use PPE the wrong way?
Yes. Yes, I have. And I'm just talking about personal experience of myself needing to run out, you know, and have to get something for my son. I know everybody is very worried, and I appreciate that everybody is using, PPE out there to think of themselves or others and the loved ones. However, I have seen a tremendous amount of people wearing their mask and exposing their nose, or wearing it under their chin, or having their gloves on and touching everything.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, yeah. Not get yeah. It. How
or like Phil has a full beard. You right. Put a mask on, you're still done.
I don't put a mask on. But what I've seen a lot is people will leave it down, and then when they come near people, then they move it up. Then
they
move
it down. It up.
Then they move it up. And I'm like, now you are actually touching your face more than you. It's either on or it's off.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. You gotta pick one.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. I've seen it all too much. Or they're touching their cell phone with their gloves or their keys. I've seen a couple people actually touch their face. I'm like, oh, well, you just defeated the whole purpose of wearing PPE.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's very real, and, you know, I just kind of go around and, all right, well, you know, good that you're using it, but you just defeated it.
Right. You wear a mask also.
I'm guessing there's a whole protocol your people have to go through before they go into the supermarket, then they get the groceries, then they're going to bring it over, and all of that is, done in a certain professional way.
Right.
Yes, correct. They still... You know, still have to follow. We're still following all of our policies on the CDC recommendation. They have to go through, gloving, making sure that they are wearing gloves, making sure we do have the sanitizer in the car so we can help sanitize, realistically what we can, if it's wiping down the bag. There is a whole procedure that I watched personally a week or two ago, just as I was doing research on how to actually sanitize when you are going grocery shopping and bringing it home. It's quite lengthy, but we do, we make sure I talk to the caregivers beforehand and you make sure that they understand the importance and the key things to do while grocery shopping, especially if we're going to be grocery shopping for our clients out there in the field.
It's life and death.
Yep.
It is. Very, very scary.
All right, Tina. We're linked up to the homemades at WPLR.com and 95.9thefox.com. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Oh,
thank
absolutely.
You.
Well, the government's asking you to... If you can, stay away from supermarkets and pharmacies for the next 2 weeks. So we thought we'd send pictures of our pantries to Kevin Estelle. He's a professional survival instructor and author. We're linked up to his stuff at WPLR.com and 95.9thefox.com. What do you think?
Well, I've had some time to look over these entries, and I'll tell you, there's definitely some interesting things that can be said about each person's style of organization and their food choices. Where would you like me to begin?
I don't know. Whatever's most important to you.
Okay, well, a couple things.
Who's going to die first?
Person four.
Who's going to die first?
Person four.
Person four is going to die first, but they're going to have a great time dying.
Right. I'm assuming that's
God.
Ashley.
Person four, if they don't die from lack of food, they're going to die from diabetes. There's
God.
Right?
Seriously.
Oh, yeah. My God.
And by the way, person four is Ashley.
Right. Of course it is.
Is it Ashley?
Yeah.
That's not true.
Let's start off with person number four. They definitely have a sweet tooth.
What gave it away?
maybe four different types of sugars, right. And multiple types of honeys. And, on top of that, even the barbecue sauce is a sweet barbecue sauce.
Yes.
Right.
There's a box of caramel apple kit.
I have the list.
And right, then right behind it is a box of sugar.
And a bag of sugar.
Two. There's a bag and a sugar. Box.
Oh, yes. And then there's honey.
Oh, my God. It's the big bag.
And there's honey next to it.
Two jars of honey. A bag of granulated sugar, a box of confectioner sugar, a caramel apple kit, two different boxes of Peeps. One of them is party cake flavored. A tin of pralines.
Pralines, okay, that's what it was, yes.
She's got a full, she's got Reese's Chips Ahoy cookies, Reese's Puffs bunny cereal, two boxes, and a frosted Danish, and that's just what I could see.
And do I see gummy bears behind the pralines?
I love gummy bears.
Oh, Parables. My God.
Yeah, you barely see it, but
you're dead.
If you blow it up, yeah, there it is.
If you're not dead, you're going to be dead from lack of eating because you're going to have no teeth left.
What's going to happen? You're going to have a sugar rush for a moment, then just drop dead.
How much ice cream is in your freezer right now?
So much.
Okay, hold on. Let's
good
get the
heavens,
all right, so good job, Phil, going through everything.
Oh, my God.
So now everyone has a sense of what's in there. All right, Kev.
Okay, so let's take a look at person number two.
No, but can you give us an overview on four? How long does she survive?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I really couldn't tell you that. I mean, one thing that we don't have the full picture of, what's in the freezer, what's in the refrigerator, right? So
right.
We don't have a total picture of all the calories. But one thing I can say is, I mean, she does have a lot of fats in the in her pantry, like canola oil,
yep.
Olive oil and whatnot. And that's really your best source for condensed energy. So that's a good thing. But again, I can't really give a great estimate, but, you know, it also depends on the amount of activity that she has, you know, at home, running around and whatnot. So,
none.
So 20 minutes. 20 minutes.
Phil, you have something?
I have to say one more thing. So all that sugar we just mentioned.
Yeah.
But then she's trying to be healthy. She's got the chickpea.
Yeah.
Pasta box. It's pasta made out of chickpeas.
Yeah. No, but you know what those chickpeas are like? Have you ever gone to a party and you look around and you're like,
even it out.
I feel like the odd person at this party. The chickpeas are like, why are we here?
Yeah.
Oh, my
pick them
God.
Out.
You can tell. Yeah. That box has to be 3 or 4 years old. There's no way it's been touched.
Like avoiding
I'm assuming she's a nervous eater.
It says discontinued.
I'm assuming that, you know, she likes crunchy foods. You know, she eats when she's nervous. And there's no doubt about it that this time is a time that's making everyone nervous. So that might explain all the crunchy cereal and all that stuff in the background.
Ashley,
too.
Those chickpeas, did they get moved from the other house?
Yes.
Yeah.
They were getting eaten.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where did they originally come from? Did Eric bring those into the mix?
I think my parents gave that to me, and they've been sitting there ever since.
Right, okay.
There you go.
An heirloom in their family.
All right.
Oh, my God.
You get the chickpeas when I die.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PR. We have Kevin Estella, professional survival instructor and author on the show. We're connected to all of his stuff at WPR.com and 95.9TheFox.com. We just went through Ashley's pantry. All of the pictures are on our Chaz and AJ Facebook page. Ashley's person number four.
Yeah.
We didn't want
Hello.
Kevin to know who's who.
Yeah.
All right. So, Kevin, who do you want to talk about next? Which person?
Because they frighten me.
Which one? Who?
Number two. The second person.
Number two.
Number two.
Number two.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Phil. Hello, number two.
They frighten
this
me.
This is fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, number two frightens me because number one, well, I should say this, there's very little organization and there's a lot of mixed use of space here, right? Like this person has perishable goods with non-perishable goods. They have some very, you know, impulsive buys and then some very practical purchases mixed in there. This person frightens me because number one, they're... I don't know how they would find anything. A lot of prepping isn't just what you pack, it's how you pack it. It's, you know, having a system because you want to be efficient with your food and how you select it and how you replace it. And I can't make rhyme or reason of how this is organized.
What the hell is cookie butter?
Cookie butter is the greatest thing on the planet, AJ.
What do you do with it?
You eat it right off the spoon. You don't have to do anything else with it.
It's right
is that like cookie dough?
It's next to, a lot of oil.
It's next to virgin coconut oil.
Yeah.
Pam and Wesson.
What kind of sick things on in your house, man?
Well, we cook with the coconut oil. So sometimes Amanda will make this vegan soup. We have a whole
All
thing
right,
in our fridge right now. We
talk.
Cook with
yeah,
that.
Whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's dead, right? Quick.
Right.
Like a week, right?
Well, yeah, the big joke with vegan is it's Native American for bad hunter.
Every once in a while, you gotta reset the guts, you know?
He's got some pasta in there. That's good, right?
Yeah. Should try some peeps.
Kraft mac and cheese, yeah.
There's two different boxes of pasta, two different boxes of mac and cheese, and two big packages of spicy ramen.
And 8 tortillas.
Tortillas, yep. Good. We got hamburger buns and 7
right,
different jars of olives.
All right, Kevin?
Yes.
What do you think of that?
Like I said, they frighten me. I mean, this is the loose cannon. This is the one that you have to worry about running through the neighbor's house and, like, trying to steal things from them on the front porch.
How?
Like, Yeah, this is the oddball. This is the one that you can't really track too well because
Ashley dies of diabetes. Phil is getting shot on someone's porch stealing
exactly.
real
right.
food
first before me. He's right. first wave.
All right, who's next?
All right, this was a toss up because I think number one and number four, they've got some good things going on here.
So no, four is Ashley.
Right, you mean three?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Number one and three. My mistake. One
okay.
and three. So between one and three, I think we could probably talk about number three. Mm. And what we can say about the third person, they've got some very interesting choices, but I don't just look at what I can see. I look at the hints of what I can't see. And I do notice in number three, there are a lot of bottles of alcohol, including what looks like a bottle of Patron.
Wait, the knob. It's distinctive.
Wait.
Picture two under the spinny cabinet.
A lot of lights, a lot of nights in New Haven. Have
there it is. I see it.
Damn it.
Oops. So what we can say about this person
that's the
is
big
that
bottle.
Alcohol is a great bartering tool.
Oh.
And something that's really interesting about this person, along with number one, is that alcohol is also a tribe builder. Right, so it's something that you can use to make friends very quickly, but it can also be used to acquire goods that you don't have. So this is why I'm putting a lot of emphasis on number one and number three. And you know, one thing I can say about number three is, with all the canned food, it's fantastic. But just be aware that it has a very high sodium content.
It
so you
does.
Have to offset
yeah.
it with water.
Right. A lot of comments on Facebook about this.
Yeah, really. Oh, sodium will kill you. Yeah.
And why are the knives in the walk-in?
Ask Jennifer.
In case he gets hung in the night.
I noticed that too.
I'll kill you.
It's dead center. It's
okay.
The first thing I saw.
All right, so one of the reasons could be if we're being robbed and it's like, we want all your food.
Oh, okay.
I'll say,
here.
Oh, here, let me, yeah.
And we're not.
Defend myself immediately.
What's in that basket next to the knives?
Napkins.
Oh, okay.
There you go, see? Yeah. There's some knives, man. Damn.
All right, so what do you think, though? I could go weeks, right?
Oh, easily weeks. I like the organization number three. If I could critique anything on number three, it's the second shelf down. There's a lack of, or I should say there's not enough space being used. Like, you could easily put in a second shelf in that dead space that's there to fill it even more, or just stack more food on top of it. You know, I do like what it looks like. There's protein powder on the top left.
Yep. Wow, you're good.
You know, I might have done this once or twice.
yeah. That's first rodeo, no.
So you've got some good diversity there. I'm a big pumpkin junkie, so I love the fact that you've got the pumpkin there. And here's something that's really interesting. You have a lot of cookbooks. And one of the concepts with prepping food for the long term mm-hmm. is to avoid the concept of what's called food boredom. So it shows that you're willing to have the resources that if you wanted to take these recipes and apply them to the ingredients that you have, like, you're not going to get bored of just eating the same thing over and over and over. So that's why I like number three.
All right. And just, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I got caught up in the hysteria and I have another section in the house where there's a ton of food.
Right.
Oh boy.
It's called the basement. Yes.
Kevin Estella's on. He's a professional survival instructor and author. We're linked up to his stuff on the radio station's website. We, on Facebook, the Chaz and AJ page, posted pictures of our pantries just to see how we're equipped. So Ashley's going to die of diabetes. And
20 minutes.
Phil's going to be shot on someone's porch
right.
stealing food. I'm pretty good, but probably will die of an overdose of sodium.
From all the canned food.
From all the soup. And I'm guessing if you're going to AJ last, you feel the best.
Well, AJ, I think the first photo that I received, this is kind of like the Goldilocks of all the photos. Like, it had a little bit of everything.
Right.
Not too hot, not too cold. And there was a lot going on that I thought was really, really good to mention in this little broadcast here. So the first thing that caught my eye was, number one, the shelf-stable protein, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about prepping, we want to think about carbohydrates, fats, oils, and protein. And in this case, I can see clearly that there's tuna fish packets and cans. So the shelf-stable protein is really good. People knock Spam all the time, but I'm half Filipino and Spam is in my blood.
Oh, I love
so
Spam.
So I think that's something that could be added to all of them.
Right.
But I like the fact that there's shelf-stable protein. Really, really good. Something that caught my eye in this one, there's two sources of fiber. There's Bavita on the left middle
right,
of the picture,
yep,
and then there's Centrum powder in the top middle of the photo. And what's interesting about that is as we experiment with different foods that we have set aside for prepping, we may end up getting backed up. And you need to maintain health or else you're going to be very preoccupied thinking about that. And you need to maintain your daily function. So the source of fiber was a good add. I don't know if that's a regular thing. I don't know if it's a function of age, but it's good to have in the pantry.
Was anyone surprised at the amount of coffee in there?
No way.
There's a ton of coffee and then a giant teacup. Like, he must drink this in the morning before he gets in here.
I love coffee. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
I'm
There's
a
enough coffee
guy.
For 10 years.
Thank you. I got that from my dad.
That Folgers container that's in there, that coffee container,
yeah.
There's a great camping hack where if you cut a small vertical slit in the side of that container, you can actually put an entire roll of toilet paper in there, and it will dispense out, keeping the toilet paper from getting damp if you leave it out overnight.
Wow.
So,
that's
another reason
AJ.
Why it kind of, you know, triggered.
Yeah, but he didn't know that.
He didn't know that.
I had no idea. I do now, though. Well, it's funny. I drink coffee. It makes me poop, so we're good.
Exactly.
Overall, this one got my attention too because it looks like it's in some type of case. I couldn't tell what was underneath that case. There's an open door and another door that's there. Good use of space. Something that's also not mentioned frequently is that a lot of the packaging that comes with your products, like Ashley cereal, you can repackage it and save space
a lot of
by
space.
Not using the cardboard boxes. So this one made the best use of space.
I can see that you got the beans in the different packet in the back so that it would fit inside the cupboard. I was so impressed.
Very well organized.
With how you managed all the space.
Down below is stuff like dishes, also like containers, like Tupperware, stuff like that.
But then he's going to walk outside with flip-flops, not be able to run away from looters, and get killed. So what's the difference?
What are you going to do?
All right. So AJ, looks like you're good. I'm good. Ashley dies of diabetes. Right. Phil gets killed
Phil gets
on
shot,
someone's porch.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin, thanks for coming on. A great book, 101 Skills You Need to Survive in the Woods, available on Amazon. Thank you, Kevin. All right. Who's hungry?
I'm hungry.
Me. I'm hungry.
Get me.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Scott Yarnell, the Sitting Duck Tavern, is on the show. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Hungry now.
What do you
menu.
Do there at the Sitting Duck Tavern?
I'm the general manager of the Oxford location.
Oh, there's more than...
there's several. They got like Stratford, Trumbull, a bunch of places.
Yeah.
Yep.
We also own the local kitchen and beer bars as well.
Look at you. According to the market like that, that's awesome.
I've been to the one in Oxford. I love it. I'm very proud that we have something so cool in Oxford.
Yeah.
It's really trendy.
We're 6 weeks into it.
How's it going? Well, before this.
It was going great. It was the town loved us, and we just got great feedback from everybody.
The food's great.
Well, it's fresh. That's why. You know, we use Pineland Farms for all of our burgers, which are outstanding.
And I haven't had the burger yet.
Oh, yeah, the burgers are great.
Oh, if you're going to have a burger, try the spicy burger. That one sounds really good.
I've had the beef tips. Oh. They're excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
I'm looking at the Milanese ciabatta. It's fantastic.
I saw that one, too.
That one leaps you when you go
on. Delicious.
When you look at it, it's like, oh, my God, it's got everything on that you want.
The picture
and
looks great.
Since we started doing the takeout, that has been one of the most popular sandwiches.
Really?
Oh, really?
And how's your lobster club?
It has been flying off the shelves, if you believe that.
See, I'm hankering for lobster so bad right now. I'm like, I just want this right now.
That's amazing.
I can see why that Milanese ciabatta is going off the shelf. I mean, the picture that you've got on the menu just makes it look like the perfect sandwich.
It's a chicken cutlet, provolone, hot peppers, roasted peppers, baby arugula, pesto aioli, and roasted ciabatta roll. I mean, it's just like the perfect combination. It just leaps at you.
And a heap
fries
of fries.
At the side. Yeah.
I didn't look at the fries. How about the sandwich? That's just amazing, man. That's a great thing.
And I also love the name.
Right. The Milanese ciabatta.
No, the Sitting Duck.
Oh, sorry. I'm on the sandwich, Joe.
Is that how you pick restaurants by the name?
I like the name.
I mean, it's fun. Like, it definitely is, like, attractive to me. Like, ooh, the Sitting Duck Tavern. That sounds fun. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. But the lobster
we also
club.
Put together a great promotion in Oxford for the healthcare workers and first responders where they can get a meal on us.
Nice.
When people donate $25.
Awesome.
They can come and get a free meal on us as well.
Oh, that's a nice thing to do.
That's fantastic, man. That's great you're doing.
Because you have Griffin Health right there in that plaza, right?
That's correct.
Huh. Man, I can't go to this lobster club over here. Fresh picked Maine lobster on a toasted Tuscan bread with lettuce, plum tomato, bacon, pickled onion, citrus, tarragon ale. Oh, my God.
Have you changed the menu a little bit for the takeout?
Oh, we have not. We still offer the full menu. And what's great is you don't even have to leave your car. We'll bring it out to you.
Awesome. Even better. See? Yeah. Thank you.
I like that. Because I don't want to stand outside 6 feet away from people and feel like I'm in a horror movie.
Yeah, no,
like,
you don't.
Literally seagulls in a parking lot.
Yeah. And then we also offer the Uber Eats app and nice. The DoorDash app as well.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Great. That's great.
I was standing at the bar waiting for a table, and Jennifer and I started chatting up a guy, big fan of the show. He asked me, where's AJ? I said, probably somewhere at a car show. Even though it's too cold for a car show, he probably found one.
Yeah, I will.
But he ordered the cheesesteak egg roll, which he said was bananas.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. Chaz, did you see this?
The Chipotle ranch dipping sauce. It's delicious.
Wow. Chaz, here's one up your alley. Double bacon mac and cheese, smoked bacon, pancetta, peas, blended cheeses, and shells.
Yeah, I had that.
That's hello. Really? Yes, yeah. Please.
Oh,
and there is something on this menu I have never seen in my life before. What's and it that? Looks like it's getting a lot of likes already. The crab tater kegs.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Where's that? Where's that? Where's that?
All the way at the bottom. Yes. On the menu. Scroll down.
I'm looking.
Oh. Giant tater tots made with Maryland crab, onion, and cheddar. Old Bay dusted, served with kickin' dipping sauce.
See, I love crab, man.
Yeah,
Keith will like those.
You just described it perfectly.
Yeah. Have you been busy with the takeout?
We're doing good. The lunches are a little slow, but once we hit dinner, those phones don't stop ringing. The Uber just keeps going off. The DoorDash keeps going off. So we're constantly just running in and out of that restaurant, sanitizing everything as it comes out, as it comes in, to make sure everybody's safe.
Yeah, because my thought is, you're supposed to stay away from the supermarkets for the next couple of weeks.
Right, yeah.
Right? And then when you're cooking stuff, you have to it's just easier. Just call.
Exactly.
Go down. And I like the trunk service. Bring it out to the car. Right. You know, hey, put it in the trunk.
Right. Plus, you're helping the restaurants out.
Yeah.
It's a win-win.
And then you guys, so when you go there, when you place an order, do you want us to call in or on the app, or how do you want us to order?
Either way.
Okay.
We're happy to do either one. The DoorDashers and the Uber Eats people are doing great. We bring in some hourly employees every once in a month to help us out. And what we do is we take all of our tips from all the stores and we pull them together and we hand out tips each week to our employees that we had to lay off.
Gotcha.
Oh, wow. That's great. And then if you want to make a donation so a first responder or healthcare worker can get a free meal, do you say that when you're calling in or when you're picking up or when?
They just call over the phone and they just make a donation. It's $25 or however much you want to give. Yesterday we had somebody generously give $250.
Wow.
I mean, it's just great that you know, everybody's, you know, backing everybody up and making sure that these guys are also getting fed as well because they're working a lot.
All right. When you call in, do you give a time? Like, all right, it's going to be 35 minutes. And how close are you to that time when you estimate it?
We give them a time to come pick up. We find out what kind of car they're driving. As soon as we see them pull up, we'll come out with the food, have them sign the credit card, and send them on the way.
Oh, I love that.
Nice. I can't just roll up to the parking lot and go, I'm here!
I don't think we'll hear you.
Yeah.
Feed me!
I love that. And I can bring my own pen so I don't have to touch someone else's pen.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because when we bring out the pens and the books, we come back in and we sanitize every pen and every book to make sure that it's fresh when it goes back out.
Oh, okay, good. All right, Scott, looks like you got things covered.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
We're trying our best.
How long have you been the general manager?
Well, we opened up on February 10th.
So you've been the GM there in Oxford since then?
Yeah, I was in Trumbull for a little while as well running that one.
Right.
Okay.
So trial by fire.
And I don't think anybody in the restaurant business ever thought anything like this would happen.
Seriously, yep.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Yeah. But you know what? We adjust quickly. So I want some good food, and this is an easy way to do it, and it's a delicious way to do it.
I am so there.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming on, and thanks for doing the stuff for the healthcare workers. I think that's a great thing. And then it's really neat that you're taking your tips, pulling them together, and taking care of the people that had to be like, I mean, come on.
That's awesome, man.
This is all good.
Look at you.
All right,
and they're very appreciative.
Yeah, and it's something they'll never forget.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Scott Yarnell, the Sitting Duck Tavern in Oxford. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
You too. Man. Thank you.
All right. So they got Oxford, Trumbull, Stratford.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Which one would AJ would do Stratford?
I'll go to Oxford. I don't mind. I'll go anywhere.
Let's see. Trumbull. Who would do Trumbull? Oh,
Trumbull's also actually kind of close to me, too.
Yeah, you could do Trumbull.
Yeah, I mean, I drive fast. I'll be any one of these places real quick. Look for the bright green car yelling, I'm here!
Yeah, and Oxford's right around the corner from me.
See, look at you.
All right, so we're linked up at WPLR.com and 95.9 TheFox.com.